Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to The Curator Podcast, Season 2, Episode 28. An interview with Tom May from The Menzingers. And just a little warning, the room that we recorded this in was pretty echoey. Tom, it's a total pleasure to meet you. How are you?
Good, good. How about yourself?
I'm okay. It's cold, as we just discussed off mic. But yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm glad. I'm happy to meet you.
Yeah, hell yeah. Me too. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
What are you drinking?
This is like some kind of coffee. I don't know if it is an Americano or if it's just a really long and not so strong espresso or a really tiny drip coffee. Can't really quite figure it out, but it's a little machine. You push the button and it just kind of comes out.
Is it doing the job?
It's doing the job. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see by the end of this, but yeah.
So you're here in Glasgow, and every single time you come to Glasgow, you always play a bigger show. How does that feel? That must be awesome.
Oh my God, it's the best. It happens here and it happens down south the last couple tours. But yeah, every time we come to Glasgow, we play a consistently bigger venue, and it's amazing, especially because they keep selling out. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah, sold out. It's almost sold out tonight. We sold out by the time the doors open tonight, which is fucking cool, man.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. I'm real fucking stoked.
It's an interesting place for it as well. It's a warehouse.
Yeah, we're in a giant warehouse that is a multi-purpose art TV studio kind of place. We're sitting on a giant mid-century modern uncomfortable leather couch next to two giant Jackson Pollock-esque splatter paintings that match each other. So in a giant photo studio. That's why the reverb's there.
Yeah, it's. We should probably draw attention to the fact that it's quite echoey in here. But hey, if you don't like it, you can just. I guess you've already turned off by this point if you don't like it.
Yeah,
if you don't
sure.
like the sound.
Definitely.
So after the party's been out for almost a year now, you've been touring pretty hard on that shit. How's that been going?
Oh, it's been going fantastically. We put it out. We weren't. You know, you never are sure how people are going to receive it. But after the party's been. Received very well by everybody, and the shows, the sizes of the places that we're playing have doubled. People are so excited about it. It's funny, you can see a marked difference between the people in the crowd. Some people only know the After the Party songs, and some people are more stoked about earlier stuff, and you can kind of notice that, and that's really interesting.
I mean, you spent a lot of your time growing up and on the road as a band, and I think a lot of your fans have probably done the same thing. Do you ever stop and think about that?
Oh, totally, yeah. It's funny, our fans are definitely grown with our, you know, they're the same age as us, and they started out when we were younger, when we were first doing it. So it's a really interesting and special thing. We must be doing something right if everybody keeps coming back. But yeah, I really like that part of it. You start seeing more kids at our shows now. You start seeing more people, you know, they're a little bit more physically calm, I guess, and a little old. You know, you guys have healthcare over here, but in the States, it's like, no, I'm not gonna stage dive tonight. Last thing I need is to be paying $10,000 to fix my arm or whatever. It's great.
I mean, I'm probably the same age as you guys. I'm 32, and I've been listening to you guys for a long time, so I kind of feel as though, like, you've been voicing like a lot of my thoughts and feelings about growing up as I've grown up. Because that's the thing they don't tell you when you start entering adulthood. It's like it's just. You still need to figure shit out. Like, your parents always seem to have shit. Well, my parents always seem to have shit figured out. And then you're like, holy fuck, I don't. And then it's good that there's bands out there who are also, you can see them evolving as human beings as they create more music. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, that's one of my favorite, not my favorite, but one of the biggest things I've realized getting older is that all these situations and people and institutions that I thought had their shit together, maybe probably didn't. Everybody, the entire world is just winging it everywhere as we, you know, hurtle through space and complete uncertainty. And I think if you embrace that, there's a little bit of comfort there. And that might be like the first stepping stone of wisdom that you kind of gain when you get a little older. Or maybe not. Maybe I'm just talking out of my ass, but who knows.
I hope that's the case, but I'm 32 and I still don't know what's going on, so maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not.
So on the new record, I was wondering, because you've been, that's your fifth album, right? And you've been a band for over a decade, about a decade-ish. How has the songwriting process changed over the years?
When we first started, I think the songwriting process was a bit more volatile, chaotic, and just kind of raw. We would just kind of throw everything against the wall and see what would fit. We'd be in a basement with microphones that didn't really work, and we'd all be playing something different and didn't realize it, and we'd all just bang it together. And then when we got to the studio, it'd be like, oh, well, turns out that doesn't work, you know, that kind of thing. And as we've gotten older, the songwriting process has become more self-aware and calculated. Not necessarily self-aware in what we're singing about, but just kind of aware in the direction that you want to go in and the process that you take it to. You can kind of, it's like almost like when you're making a first draft of a paper in school, like there's a reason that you do that. There's like, you start to gain your direction. Even if you don't stay with your original focus, you still get onto a path to finding something that truly works for you.
So would you say it's kind of been, every album's been a process of refining towards a goal of the ultimate Men Thinkers album?
I would say so, yeah. I think that we'll always be chasing that. Well, I don't think we'll ever get it, but we'll always try to get better and chase after it.
It's amazing that you still have the drive to do it after 10 years, you know what I mean? Like, if it was me, I don't think I would.
Well, part of me doesn't know how to do anything else, so yes, I have to keep doing that. But yeah, no, the reason, I mean, like you said, we keep coming places and the venues are getting bigger and bigger, so that definitely keeps pushing us along. I mean, there's definitely parts of this that you get a little bit more tired doing, and for the first time ever a couple of years ago, I started to notice that you'd feel a little bit jaded on tour. You'd be like not thankful. The gratitude just wasn't there. You know, you'd be like playing a show and even over here somewhere in a random town, and let's say it was like an average show. It didn't even have to be a bad show, and that might allow that to infest your brain and be like, you know, like I think most people in the world do question every move that you make and have a whole bunch of self-doubt and treat yourself like shit. But it is, once you can gain that perspective back of knowing that what you're doing is what you want to do and being sure of yourself, it's kind of, yeah, it's great.
I mean, the album does seem to deal with those themes of like, you're doing what you want to do and people may have told you not to do it. But you're still here.
Everybody said not to do it. Except for our friends and our fans, but like all of our family and people that were in bands that we toured with that we looked up to, we'd get a couple, two, three beers in them and start to say some shit. Or you'd see them getting fights and you'd be like, all right, well, is this how I want to live in 10 years? Or this is how I see myself when I'm 40, you know? And yeah, they did definitely say not to do those things. But we did it anyway, and I think we'll keep doing it. And it's also, there's like a little bit of the idea, it's tough to remember that there's no recipe for anything. Like the world is not full of recipes. There's not like one way to do anything. And when you realize that you can learn from other people, but in the end what you make your own and you do your own journey and your own process, I think that, you know, you can't really be stopped.
So how much has the process of touring changed then in light of these people who have you seen that are maybe, you know, falling apart?
Oh man, we don't do things that we've seen them do that didn't work. So that's like, it's kind of like, not necessarily like looking at an accident on the side of the highway, but it's, you know, we'll be like, oh, well, they toured for 6 months out of the year and they didn't spend money on things to make them more comfortable. Or to make them last longer and they fell apart. Well, we won't do that. You know, we'll take the extra steps to take the time off and spend the time with our families and with each other and treat each other with respect and love and try to make sure that everything stays afloat.
It seems so obvious to do that, but as you've just said, and I think as you know, as we all know kind of throughout the history of music, is people tend to not do that. They don't take a step back and are gathered with that much self-awareness to go, maybe we should change how to do that.
I don't think that we do that enough. I don't think I do that enough in my personal life. And I look at a lot of people in the world, and I think that a lot of the problems, especially at least in the Western world, come from people not examining themselves that way or not, you know, taking a step back and being like, I don't have to do this way, you know, like whether they're being taken advantage of by an institution or whatever. But just look at like people who you know in relationships that are horrible, but they stay in those relationships, the two of them, it's the worst, you know, like it just kind of, sometimes it takes really, really heroic leaps to change yourself for the better. And then you realize that, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal anyway.
It must be good to know as well that when you began the band, presumably, like you had no idea that you four guys would be able to like do this for so long and gel together the way you have, you know? And I guess a lot of this conversation is about insight and reflecting on the past. But what did you reflect on that and think yourself has been quite lucky that you're with like a band of guys who like are kind of similar in that regard?
Oh yeah, totally. It's certainly a massive amount of luck involved, as there is with everything, I think. But I don't want to sell ourselves too short, because I do feel that we made the life sacrifices and did the hard work and pushing that we felt that we needed to do. I mean, sure, we slacked here and there, and there's so many times, so many things we could have done massively better. But we really did just stick with it when we were broke and when we all had to live together, and we just kind of, you know, everything wasn't looking very good and grim. We kind of just pushed through it anyway because we wanted it so bad.
And now you're here in fucking Glasgow again. But plus, I would do a show to like 1,000 people.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. I'm here. My friend Bob's did this guy Bob. He did the show. He's done every show we've ever played in Glasgow, I think. And
Bob's
from the small,
fucking love Bob.
Dude, he's the best, man. From the small show to this biggest one, like we keep coming back and seeing the same people. The city is wonderful and gorgeous. It was even the sun was shining today. Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic.
It makes you thankful that you've done all the pushing.
Yeah, yes, it does. And it's definitely difficult to remember that sometimes, but. And who knows, maybe it was all luck and I'm just talking on my ass, so I'll accept that, but still, yeah, I'm definitely thankful for it.
You guys have definitely worked hard. Like I said, I've been following you guys for years, and to see you guys keep doing stuff is, a lot of bands kind of don't, because it's hard. It's really hard to balance the life and the music together, you know?
Extremely, yeah. It's extremely hard. And we've been fortunate enough to not have anything, you know, too catastrophic happen to us. Like, there's no, everybody's healthy. Families, for the most part, are pretty, you know, on a good keel. We're very fortunate in that. It's funny, I think, like, the oldest way of people saying cheers is, like, or in other languages I've found when we travel is always to health. And you kind of forget that there's so much of the health that's, like, completely out of control. And you start to realize that the older that you get as well.
You're looking pretty healthy at the moment, man.
All right, thanks, man. It's just this whatever I'm drinking, espresso, Americano, a Europeano, whatever.
Genetic random coffee.
Yeah, it's genetic random coffee. It's actually quite good, man. It's better than the one I had the other day.
Well, you know, I guess that's another improvement, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Oh, yeah.
One thing I was thinking about earlier on when I was listening to your records and work, because I'm leaving my job tomorrow.
Oh, congrats.
I was just, you know, kind of skiving, goofing off. And I was wondering, like, see, when you guys started, when did you and Greg realize that you guys complimented each other so well, songwriters?
I don't know. We kind of just, both bands that we each played in before this one, we had two vocalists. It was like a thing that everybody in Scranton kind of did, probably based off like Rancid and, you know, the likes. I don't know. Just kind of kept working at it. And like when we became a band, Greg played in a band with my brother.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we kind of just sniped them and took him, and then we just kind of just, I don't know if we kind of discovered it so much as we forced it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's worked out for the past 10 years, so.
Oh, yeah, it's going great. It's working out really well. I couldn't ask for anything else.
There always seems to be that good vibe, you guys, as well. Whenever you're in the music, it feels like it's been written by guys that really care, you know?
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I like to think I care. Sometimes you get too stoned and you're trying to fall asleep and you realize, you're like, am I fake? Am I a fraud? And then, yeah. I hope everybody, well, has those thoughts. I don't feel so alone in it, but yeah.
I definitely have those thoughts. You're not alone.
Makes me feel better already. There we go.
I'm starting a new job next week, and I get those thoughts like on a minute-to-minute basis.
Yeah, I'm sure. Although it's these big life changes that are, you know, they're the ones that make the difference. The one you'll be talking about in a couple of years.
I fucking hope so, man.
Yeah. So, well, it's either going to be like, yeah, that was the great time when I did that, or, oh my God, for fuck's sake, you remember when I did that? That's so stupid.
What the fuck was I thinking? Why? Oh my God.
And in the end, it's never going to be that bad, so.
Yeah, that's the thing. It never is that bad. So you always make a big deal out of it in your head, and nothing's ever really that bad in the end. It always comes out in the okay, usually.
Yeah, barring some type of like horrible disease. Events. Yeah, or disease or something, or circumstances, it's going to be all right.
So what's happening next then? I mean, I read an interview recently that you were saying that you're going to write some new music, but you don't know what it's going to be like.
No, I mean, it's going to be so far what we've been working on is already, I think, in a more open direction than we did in our last record. So I'm not going to say the songs are better yet. They're all in their infancy. But I think that we have an open mind when it comes to the creative process that we hadn't had before, that I think is going to push us to be able to make stuff that we really like and be not bound by some of the other rules that we used to set and stuff.
What kind of rules did you used to set?
Well, just the preconceived notions of how you have to write a song, the song structure, or how the guitar has to sound, or what kind of melodies could exist where, like, you know, just have to be constant downstroking, you know, like those kind of things, like all the stuff that we maybe didn't hold us back. That might be the wrong phrasing to use, but definitely kept us within a certain track. And I'm hoping that this time, because of how open we'll be with the creative process, that we'll get some interesting things. Who knows? Maybe we'll put out a record and everybody be like, oh, you hear them trying to sound like Indie Darlings or some bullshit and sound like fucking dickheads. But I mean, it's going to be punk, but yeah. We'll see. We'll see where it goes. I'm excited.
Speaking of songwriting, did Will Yip have a really big influence on the new album?
What's that?
Did Will Yip have a big influence on, like, in writing the new records?
He definitely did, yeah. We came in writing with the song. A lot of times when we used to go to the studio, we would write the songs, demo them, and then we would go into the studio and we would basically re-record those demos with somebody who had a better ear and a better handle on the equipment than us. I mean, there's definitely parts and like confidences and stuff that came from all of those other people that we recorded with. I would never say that any of them didn't do us justice. They're incredible. Matt and Will and Jesse and amazing producers. But when we went in with Will, we went in with a little bit more of an open idea, and we spent several days playing with the song structures and even adding parts. And Will would be like, hey, why don't we stop here? Then we would gather together and be like, okay, well, what's this song missing? Can we add something here? And then we go into the room and bang it out. And just doing that was a new aspect of the recording process that we had not done before. So it was like a... Yeah, he was very influential in that part of allowing us. He's kind of like a mirror, you know. He would be able to allow us to see what we were doing and what we wanted to get, and also help us color it. You know, it's cool.
Were you open to that initially when you came in, or was there any reluctance?
It was a conscious decision.
Okay.
Yeah, and we went up and met with him, and that was kind of the plan that we hatched, and sweet. That became a conscious decision. And I think that, and it could be, we'll see, we haven't, you know, knocked anything in or who we're going to record with and all that stuff yet, but the next time that we go in, I feel that we'll do even more of that. We'll have an even more open approach to where someone can help us because of their, you know, fact that they don't have the same emotional or personal investment that we do, so we're not like, the interpersonalities doesn't matter, it's like a new thing in the mix, and we can totally kind of knock down those things that stop you from being super creative, like the fear of rejection, things like that, you know? Like that's half the battle for producers, man, is getting somebody to either to slay their own ego, whether it's too big or too small, to get the best out of them.
Yeah, because the recording process is quite daunting, even if you've been doing it for years and years and years, because it's like, well, What if that guy there thinks it's shit? What the fuck do we do?
Oh, yeah, it's horrible. My friend Andy and I, we record bands in Philadelphia, and we've done some work on some friends' bands. And it's heartbreaking to see somebody who's afraid to kind of like go for it. One, because you feel like they're not doing their thing, and two, because they don't do it right, because they can't get the work down if you're afraid that you're going to fuck it up. Yeah. That's a whole like push-pull kind of constant battle with collaborative art, I think.
It's so interesting that you guys have evolved that way as well, because I guess it's kind of working towards the perfect Menzie Goods record, isn't it?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I hope so.
Do you think you're close to those kind of perfect songs that you guys have written?
No, I don't think I don't think we could be. I mean, you look at all great artists and things like that. It seems like oftentimes they make their best work in those, that confusion at the end of adolescence and the beginning of adulthood, especially in something like punk rock, which is a hyper energetic and you know, fiercely it still has a bit of that nihilism, and it's fiercely anti-establishment inherently. And, you know, those kind of great works seem to happen at that younger, fiery stage. But I don't think that you can get really good at your craft and really good at the way that you do it unless you're paying attention and just trying to become better your whole life.
When you began, was it a sense of you wanted to get better at it, or was it just like, let's just bang out some four chords and let's just have fun?
Oh, it's definitely let's bang out some four chords, let's have fun. Like, that was for sure the approach that we had forever.
When did it change?
I think it kind of just slowly started to change, especially when we... even from the beginning, we had some songs that were written beforehand acoustically and worked, and some songs that were just bashed together. So it kind of just like went together always. And still to this day, we might show up to a practice and stuff that we had brought to the table isn't working. So we might just, you know, be having fun and start jamming and riffing on stuff. And then that could grow into a song all on its own. Yeah.
It's so cool to I've talked to a lot of people on this podcast, and it's a mixture of people like who are in bands, and the band writes a unit, and just people who are like the songwriter, and then they bring it to the band, and then the band fill it out. And it seems like you guys have both approaches.
Yeah, we do both for sure. Yeah, there's some of our best songs have been written just like banged out, the four of us. Like, somebody just starts playing a chord, next thing you know, a drum beat comes, and then maybe the first chorus didn't work, and we start fucking with something else, and you know, it's all lost to the end, you know, whatever of time. Nobody knows, can remember exactly how we got to where we landed, but that's how songs started and ended that way. And there's other ones where we brought them in acoustic and they hardly changed at all, you know. So yeah, definitely works both ways.
That's really interesting, man. I just love talking about the creative process. I could do it all day, but I'm worried I might get my car towed away or get a parking ticket. So before I finish, Tom, I would like to ask you, is there anything else you want to say? And is there anything else that you want to ask me, perhaps?
What's your new job, man?
I'm going to be social media manager.
Oh, fantastic. That's nice.
I'm going to be selling crack online, basically.
Oh, that's not bad. You know, I hear there's a high profit margin with that. You can, you know, make good for yourself.
It's so unpunk rock. It's fucking unreal, man.
To sell crack online? Yeah. No, it's not on punk rock. If you're working, you know, on your own terms.
I hope so, man. It's a big... They're quite a big agency, and I'm working on a contract for a big computing company, a big multinational computing company. So I'm pretty terrified, to be honest, because it's like taking me right out of my comfort zone. I'm not entirely sure if it's going to work out for me, if it's going to be something I'm going to enjoy, but you got to try, man.
Man, especially getting taken out of your comfort zone. That's like the place that you, I think in life where you can truly shine. You know, they say like, what's it? The measure of a person can be the amount of uncomfortable conversations you're willing to have. You can take that and expand it out into life and be like, all right, well, how many times did you really put yourself out there? All it takes is like one leap, you know?
It's true, man. You're totally right. I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, it's true.
Fuck. I feel a bit better now, thanks.
Good, no problem.
I didn't expect that to happen today.
Yeah, all right. Fuck yeah.
Must be like coffee, man. It's giving you
coffee,
wisdom.
The sunlight, that's definitely... No, I think it's these two splash art paintings, which I keep making fun of, but I actually quite like, so...
Yeah, I wonder if they're for sale.
Yeah, right? Probably.
Tom, it's been a total pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yeah, great, man. Nice to meet you.
I've been chasing the Menzigers for an interview for about 2 years, so I'm pretty chuffed that we were able to make it work this time round. Big thanks to Sarah at Transmission for helping me sort this out, and of course to Tom himself for being such a gentleman and for giving me some of his time. They were playing at a really early show, actually, so this interview took place basically as soon as I finished work. So I had to finish work and just race right over there to get it done. And as I said in the interview as well, I could have spoken to him for much longer, but I was really, really worried my car was going to get a ticket because it was not a free parking zone. But, you know, I apologise for this episode being a day late. I literally recorded it on the day it was supposed to go out, so that's why it's about 24 hours late. But hey, man, I'm just doing the best I can here. And you know I hate being late. In fact, I really love punctuality. Lateness really annoys me, so I'm sorry if it annoyed you too. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please take a second to rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, because that would make me feel nice and warm and fuzzy inside. Until next time, bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.